open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there.
That's more like it. Yesterday's was weak.
It was compared to that. That was much better.
You weren't in your comfort zone.
And I had been wiped out. I'm an old man now. 3 nights of just crazy partying. I don't recover like I used to.
No, we don't.
I think janitors make excuses.
I'm not making an excuse. Just pointed it out, man. Just the facts, bro. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Of course, we're joined by the great Jason Gibbs as well, who's already chiming in phenomenal material early on in the show. Gibbs, are you going to be able to maintain that pace throughout the next 2 hours?
Child, please.
All right, today's the first day teams can tag players should the Browns franchise or transition tag anyone. Let us know, 216-578-0850. We're going to go through the running back position today. We've got Sir Andrew Gribble, the Browns senior staff writer in studio at 1:30, 2 o'clock, the Browns position review six-pack. And we're going to evaluate this position. One thing's Ohio Business Machine hot topic is, how big of a priority should be getting another running back be in this draft or free agency? How big will the running game be in this new offensive scheme? And then we'll talk about the running back position in hour number two. And just so you know, here are the tag options, the exclusive franchise tag, a one-year tender offer to a player for an amount no less than the average of the top 5 salaries at the player's position or 120% of the player's previous salary, whichever is greater. The player has all negotiating rights to the player. The team, I'm sorry, has all negotiating rights to the player. The non-exclusive franchise tag, one-year tender, same thing in terms of the compensation. The player, however, can negotiate with other teams. The player's current team has the right to match any offer or receive 2 first-round picks as compensation.
Thank you very much.
If a team wants to go ahead and sign a player who
has that happened before?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. The transition tag is a one-year tender offer to a player for an amount that is the average of the top 10 salaries at the position, guarantees the original club the right of first refusal to match any offer the player may receive from another team. So it's a way to say, you're our guy, but you can go out and test the market and let the market actually set the value for you, and we have the opportunity to match it. Transition tag can be used if the franchise tag is not used by the team in that year. It can be rescinded, but teams that rescind a transition tag cannot use it again until next season. So you couldn't transition tag one person, take it away, and then transition
right.
tag another person.
And I would imagine that the 6 through 10 salaries are still extremely expensive.
Yeah,
I mean, you're probably saving around $1 million.
That's what it was. When I remember looking at it for Alex Mack, they saved about $1 million by doing it. And listen, he's got an opportunity now, speaking of Alex Mack, to go because of when you sign transition tag, you're signing the contract that is made by the other team. So they put in there that he had the opt-out after his second year, and now he has the opportunity to do that. And I think the writing is on the wall that that is what is going to happen with him. So the real question becomes, when you look at the Browns and you look at who the potential free agents are on this team, when you look at it, who's a possibility to get tagged on this team? I would say that you look at safety, Tashawn Gibson. I don't think he's in any way, shape, or form going to be tagged. I don't think that he played at that level. I don't think they feel the need to tag him at that level. So I don't think he will be tagged. I think when you look at the only guy that seems possible to me, Craig Robertson won't be tagged. Travis Benjamin won't be tagged. The only person who seems like a possibility to me to be tagged at the end of the day is probably Mitchell Schwartz. But they're talking about for an offensive lineman because people are saying, well, it's a right tackle. That's not how the franchise tag works. It's the average of the top 5 linemen salaries, period,
right,
which are all left tackles. So the franchise tag
is 12 point something
over
million.
12, yeah, 12, like about $12.2 million. So do you franchise Mitchell Schwartz and make him the highest paid player on your team when his contract value is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, $8 million, maybe $9 million
right.
a year.
And I guess your dialogue with Mitchell Schwartz or his representation will determine what move you make. Because if he is open-minded about coming back to Cleveland, or he's motivated to come back to Cleveland and really just wants to make what he's due, as you just mentioned, that $6, $7, $8 million a year and continue his career in Cleveland, I think the brass here in Cleveland would be enamored to give that deal to someone who's played very well. And as we see around the league, and as a lot of people make mention of what Cleveland does not do, is they let their free agents escape and they become a core player somewhere else. Why not keep that core player here? And the one thing that would scare the you-know-what out of me is losing both Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz in the same year. And especially, and even though you hope that Cam Irving has a great offseason, gets stronger, learns the game, gets back to Cleveland and gets to know, you know, the offensive line coach and the concepts that he's going to be using, which are going to be significantly different than what John DeFilippo did. The sure. sooner he can grasp that, the more he's ready. Because for Cam Irving and where he was picked last year and the expectations that came with him, if there truly are absences along that offensive line, he needs to grow a lot. And just like if we do take a quarterback at number two and you expect him to get the ball early, I want Cam Irving to start 16 football games for me somewhere along that offensive line and playing at a good level in your second year in the National Football League.
He's more comfortable at center. That's where he was drafted to play, basically kind of drafted to be the jack of all trades last year and then come in this year when Alex Mack opted out as expected. And he still has not yet, but that is the expectation. And then you would put him in at center. So if you lose him and Mitchell Schwartz, you're going to have some interesting options. Because you've still got Michael Bowie here, who, remember, got hurt again yep. last year. You've got Austin Pastore, who played very well at guard, who played at tackle when he was with
Fits
the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Fits this system much better than last year's system.
Yes, much more of a power guy.
Correct.
You could move Joel Bitonio to right tackle, who was a left tackle in college, so right. he's played tackle. You could move Bitonio over there, put Pastore in at the left guard, and you would have a line that would be Joe Thomas, Pastore, Irving, Greco, and Bitonio.
Right.
I'd like to see them keep Mitchell Schwartz. It's going to be a matter of if A, Mitchell Schwartz wants to stay here, and B, if Mitchell Schwartz feels, I don't expect this team right now to overpay to keep their own guys, because I don't think that they feel they're in that winning window yet.
Right.
But I do hope they find a way to keep him. I think Mitchell Schwartz is a guy that is solid. Is he spectacular? No. But is he solid? Is he a plus player? Absolutely. You saw the kind of the grades from Pro Football Focus, et cetera, et cetera. I know that that's good. I saw him do a very good job one-on-one with Von Miller, and we saw what Von Miller did in the Super Bowl to a right tackle for Carolina Panthers. So I believe Mitchell Schwartz is a quality player, is a top half of the league right tackle, if not better, and is a guy that of all the people we talked about, he would be my number one priority. I don't think he gets tagged. I don't think the Browns have anybody that's tag-worthy, but he would be my number one priority. My number two priority would probably be bringing back Travis Benjamin at a reasonable rate. My number three priority would probably be Tashawn Gibson. And then you've got Craig Robertson, Batamosi, Tank Carter. And then Austin Pastore is a restricted free agent. You'll put a tender on him and keep him.
Yeah, and you know what? Just to talk, you know, Cam Irving, if he does in fact move to center and would be playing in this Hugh Jackson scheme with the power run game, the two things that I think Cam Irving has to do to essentially play that role and start as a center in this league is, A, we all know he needs to get physically stronger, because his role as the center in a power, you know, power run scheme is going to be the point man in a lot of double teams. That means Greco's going to be pulling a lot, or Bitonio's going to be pulling a lot if those are your two guards, okay?
Yep.
But Cam Irving's going to be a part of a lot of double teams, and that guard's going to chip up onto that next-level linebacker, and that means Cam Irving's going to be one-on-one with the man in the middle for any defense that we're essentially playing, their nose tackle, and be able to sustain that. The other thing that he needs to do, and I know you've pointed out many times with Cam Irving getting either his starting time or playing time in the football games last year in 2015, was his feet. He was on the ground way too much for an offensive lineman, tripping over himself, and that's the other role that he can maybe grow into, because he is a good athlete, and he moves so well. Is if he can get his feet below him, there are some, you know, tackle guard or guard center combos where they get out in front of an outside run play, and you get those center and guard up on those outside linebackers or up on support with Duke or the Crow, you know, on a toss sweep of some sort outside, is he's got to clear his feet. He's got to be under more control with better footwork.
Yeah, they've got to find a way to get him in space. That's where he is going to excel. That's kind of what his modus operandi is. So hopefully he is able to do that, get out there in space and make some plays. I think he feels more comfortable at center. That's where he played. I mean, the guy had never played guard. And I know that it's an offensive line position. I know he's played tackle in college. He played center. But that was a big adjustment for him. And yeah. I don't think he was physically ready for the power that he was going to face across from him in the National Football
League. No, and I think where if you look at Danny Shelton, how he plays defense, a nose tackle is usually 300-plus pounds, and they're just, you know, beef in the middle. And at guard, you're seeing a three technique, which is a 285 to 305-pound monster athlete that penetrates, goes side to side, you know, and really, you know, presses the issue and becomes a penetrator in the defense. So you found a young player who wasn't quite ready to play, even though he's a first-round draft pick, catching an awful lot and not taking that physicality to a three technique, and was getting thrown to the ground, missing a lot, because those 295, that 10 to 12 pound, 15, 20 pound difference from nose tackle to three technique, it's a faster, it's a quicker get off. They have better hands. They're more elusive, especially in pass rushing situations. And that's why the good ones also get a lot of money to be paid, you know, being a penetrating, like Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson. Those guys aren't nose tackles. Those are three and five techniques because they're as good against the run as they are against the pass at 290 pounds.
But that experience, I think, will be good for him so that he can, like, figure out what he's got to do.
And clear his feet. Watch himself get pushed around and realize he's got to be dedicated to the weight room. He's got to be dedicated. And I think Cam Irving might be the one guy, and that'd be an interesting question for him, that would probably have missed. And this is not to discount, you know, George, the line coach that took over after Andy Moeller, but Andy Moeller, for me watching practice, it was a lot of footwork driven drills. Okay, and I don't, you know, we don't get to watch practice during the season, A, because it's part of the show, and B, we're not allowed to be out there. But I know when I watch Andy Moeller, it was a lot of footwork, it was a lot of hand placement, and those are the things that a rookie, especially one wanting to play early in his career, needs to master, because with those two things, those two fundamentals, you can take care of some of the physical inadequacies that you carry as a rookie into the NFL.
And he knows now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He knows this offseason,
I better bring it or I'm going to get, you know.
Right. He knows what he's dealing with in the National Football League, because you don't know as much in practice as you do when you get out there in a game against somebody else. And I think that that became very, very apparent. And I think that it'll be a good thing for Cam Irving. But the real question is, do you guys want to see the Browns tag anybody? Again, here are the estimated franchise tag figures this year. Quarterback, $19.6 million. Defensive end, $15.4 million. Wide receiver, $14.4 million. Linebacker, $14 million. Corner, $13.7 million. Offensive line, $13.5 million, they're saying now. They just updated this. $13.5 million, they think.
Offensive line?
Yeah. Ooh. It was 12. Wasn't it 12.2 like earlier today?
It when Gibbs and I talked about it, it was like 12 point something on Friday.
They updated it and they just updated. I looked at it this morning. They just updated it. Defensive tackle, $13.4 million. Running back, $11.5 million. Safety, $10.6 million. Tight end, $9 million. Kicker punter, $4.5 million. So those are the franchise numbers. The Browns just don't have anybody that fits the profile. They really just don't have anybody that fits the profile. I think, you know, guys like, I think Von Miller will get franchised. I think Josh Norman, you could see Alshon Jeffrey getting franchised, probably should. But I just don't see anybody for the Browns. There's anybody here that's deserving of the franchise tag.
Yeah, and it's not only
G.I. George, by the way, saying it's sad that no Browns free agent is deserving of the tag. Not many teams have franchise tags
that
used that
that's
much.
Not only do we not have the guy that deserves to be a franchise, they're not really at the pinnacle franchise type positions, you know, where they can make the significant impact. If I would say Tashaun Gibson as a free safety, if he went seven interceptions, you know, back to back years, or 8-8 again and maintained his pace with no drop off, maybe in consideration. Because that is a game-changing, game-breaking type of statistic or number. And a guy that you want to retain, you know, and build your defense around. Now, there was drop-off there. And a free safety, you know, they can be very active, but not so much in the defense and the role he was playing. He's a ball-hawking free safety.
Yeah.
He's not an in-the-box, impact-blitzing free safety, as you see out of T.J. Ward and the Stewart kid there in Denver the way we have. So, and I think, you know, a right tackle, it's not a left tackle. You know, and if you look at inside linebacker, that weak inside linebacker here, you know, has Craig Robertson really played at the level to deserve that? No, I don't think so. Not even close. You know, he's not a Luke Kuechly. Luke Kuechly hits the market. You're a franchise tagging him like today, 9:01 p.m. or 9:01 a.m., sorry, whatever it is. So not only do we not have the guys, we don't have them at the positions that are pinnacle to help us, like, win or lose us football games.
Yeah. We got to find those difference makers, man. That's what it's all about, Matt Wilhelm.
Foundation pieces.
I mean, the franchise guys means your franchise most likely can't go on without these guys. Von Miller is that guy. Alshon Jeffrey for Jay Cutler, within reason there in Chicago, because there's not many other weapons, with Kevin White hurt all last year, probably is that guy. There's really no one else to throw it to. So I can see them being the face of that franchise at their position, game-breaking type positions.
That's what you need. Foundation pieces in the Browns. You know, Alex Mack, it's great, but how much does a center contribute to winning in the National Football League? I don't know. I don't know the answer. That's not, to me, that's not where you put
Look at what the Steelers did, losing Pouncey.
Yeah, they're fine.
That's what I mean. You've got good backs. You've got a good quarterback. You've got, you know, good wideouts. You stick a guy in there.
I would just want to say one thing, because people, G.I. George tweeted this out, and you know I love G.I. George. Said the Alex Mack contract, reason number 8, Ray Farmer was fired. First of all, I disagree with that. I don't think Alex Mack wants to be here. You can't force a person to sign a long-term deal. What the Browns could have done was franchise him. You can only use the franchise tag twice. So you got 2 years out of him. If you franchised him and then franchised him again, the penalty for franchising him the second time is 20%. So you'd be paying him an extra 20% on top of that. So you would have had him for 2 years. He still would have had the opportunity to leave after 2 years, and you could have done nothing about it, and you would have paid him over the 2 years probably about $5 million more than you paid him. So I think this actually worked out well for the Browns, knowing that it seems that Alex Mack doesn't want to be here anymore.
Right.
And this is to Kevin Kvasnak. I hope I said that right. So no center prospects to replace him, and Cam Irving isn't the answer. First of all, Cam Irving was regarded as the number one center in the draft last year, was a first-round grade on many people's boards. Is he a guard? No. But could he be the center? Of course. When people make such definitive statements, Cam Irving is not the answer. We don't know if Cam Irving is the answer. He's going to play his position now.
I think Cam Irving needs to actually play a position more than one day in a row.
And this is the position that he was, he's supposed to play.
He was in a different position every day last year. From day one in training camp, you're going to play guard today. Wednesday, you're going to play left tackle because that's Joe Thomas's day off.
I was just going to say, and a lot of that had to do with that day off, too. You know, you wanted to get him reps. You didn't want to have a drop-off from him, you know, and the look that you get offensively. You don't want to take a day off. So you put your potential, you know, your first-round guy that has a first-round talent at any spot along that offensive line and expect it to, you know, to go on without any hiccups. And I think that deterred his growth as a first-year offensive lineman.
He said he is weak at the point of attack and his technique is bad. Well, his guard technique is bad. He had never played there before. He knows center. He knows how to play center. He knows the techniques of playing center. And I think he will get stronger. And this is his natural position. How big of an adjustment would it be for you? Well, you're a linebacker. What's the difference between you if you're playing the Mike or the Will in a 3-4, or if you all of a sudden one played outside and you were doing it every week in practice, you're playing a different position?
It's horrible.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
The communication's different, your responsibilities are different, your stances are different, what you're looking at is different, your technique is different, it's all different.
It's not easy. I think people think, it's just so easy.
It might be easy for a guy that's in his third year in the National Football League and has kind of bounced around and played spot duty in multiple different places along an offensive line, or you look at the Colts multiple years, one guy gets hurt, so they shuffle him, they move here, they push and pull, you know, but they've been doing it for a couple of years. For a guy coming off of NCAA, you know, the NCAA, you know, and his success there at Florida State, it's tough for a rookie to do, because a rookie just wants to play a role. And you give a guy multiple roles, and he's halfway in on three different roles. He can't commit.
Right. And center, I would argue, is the most specialized of all the offensive line positions to begin with.
Yep.
I think it's way too early to give up on Cam Irvin. All right. 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily. Segura, Wilhelm Gibbs.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook outside.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Segura, Wilhelm Gibbs, 216-578-0850. Some Browns news also from around the league today. Josh McCown, shocker, saying he is willing to mentor a young quarterback in Cleveland. He was on Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports Radio earlier today. He said, my expectation is to come into work and be available and be ready to do whatever is asked of me. If that's to bring along a draft pick and start until the guy's ready, then I'm willing to do that. If that's to go the full 16, I'm excited about doing that. If that's to help the guy as he takes over, whatever my role, whatever's asked of me, I'm just here to win football games. Whatever my role is, I'm all in. I just want to help. I absolutely love Josh McCown. I'm not afraid to say it. I think he is a phenomenal guy. And I think that he will be a great asset, almost another quarterback coach for whoever it is. I hope that the Browns do have that young quarterback groomed, ready to take over. They draft one number two in this draft, and that Josh McCown, I think, will be a great guy for him.
No, I agree. I really do. And I think, you know, Josh has been great in the building from what we hear from everybody across the board. And I think even for us, the one day we were doing this show and Josh McCown was in town for some reason. And him and Al Saunders had an in-depth, you know, 30 to 45-minute chat, you know, just right here outside the glass in the dog bowl. And it's just – and I even talked to Coach Saunders, you know, thereafter, and it's just, you know, talking concepts and his role and what he likes to do and what he's accustomed to and just bouncing ideas, you know, back and forth, which is something that I would enjoy doing with, you know, any defense coordinator, whether it's Ray Horton or Jim O'Neill or whoever. That's why I was so chomping at the bit last season when things were going so bad, especially against the run. It's I just want to understand, you know. So, A, for me, for peace of mind, to go, okay, I don't agree, but at least I know what they're trying to accomplish. And then, A, if which I would definitely give, is my opinion on how you could fix it.
Yep.
You know, which I know that a lot of coaches, because of egos and so on and so forth, you know, aren't so open-minded to take any type of coaching, especially in season.
Well, it's good to have that guy around. Another piece of Browns news. Efo, everybody asks about Efo. This is what he said on his own Instagram. Quote, a lot of people have asked me about my recovery. I'm not quite 100% yet, but I'm close, and in the next couple of weeks, I'll show you some of the progress I have made. Although this past year has had many ups and downs, I'm finally close to the point I want to be. Now it's time to get better as a player and a person. Again, I think anything you get from Efo, just from what I've been told about his injury, is icing on the cake, but it's nice to see that he says he's close to 100%. And ready to get out there at this point. It means you'll probably have an opportunity to see him in training camp, hopefully in mini camp, and see really if he's going to be a guy that could contribute. Because with the way that Justin Gilbert has been disappointing, with Tremont Williams getting a year older, Hayden coming back, there's still a lot of Pierre Desir, Kwan. There's still some, you know, there's opportunity at that quarterback position.
There is.
And Efo was a guy that many people thought was a first round talent. Who fell because of that injury.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, I know, you know, it makes Browns fans cringe, but if you could imagine that the old regime here in Cleveland could offset making a bad pick in 2014 at the eighth overall pick with Justin Gilbert could be offset by a whimsical seventh round pick, you know, who's greatly...
Whimsical, good use.
You know, who's greatly injured and really, you know, kind of like, you know, draft and stash situation.
Yeah.
That actually works out in our favor and... in the long term, trumps the miss in the first round.
Yeah, and I listen, Justin Gilbert still has an opportunity to get it together. Will he? I don't know, but you would like to hope in this defense he can find a way to do it. We'll find out if he can, and we'll see. But it's nice to know that you have another guy in the mix that has the potential to maybe step up and help your football team, and that's what hopefully the Browns have in Efo, and I know people have asked about that as well. Derek Mosley saying, I love Josh, man. His toughness is so underrated. I hope his attitude can trickle into these guys. Imagine Gilbert with that attitude. And that's true. And that's one of the things, you know, I loved. Remember when Hugh Jackson was hired and we read some of the quotes that people said about him, Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle. He makes the best players on his team become the leaders. And I think that if the Browns have an opportunity to get some of their best players to be leaders and start to demand that accountability of their teammates, I think that you maybe can reach a guy like Justin Gilbert. Because physically, this isn't an issue of physical gifts.
No.
You know, you're not worried. It's not like with Johnny where you're worried about physically, is he actually big enough to play quarterback in the NFL?
Is the arm strong enough?
Right. Justin Gilbert has the physical gifts. He just needs to get kind of the mental approach to the game and what it is to be successful in the National Football League. That's what he needs to get his head around. And if he can do that, I think he has an opportunity to maybe, you know, do something. But it'll be nice to have another guy, another option in Ifo that can help your team out if he is not ready to go.
Yeah, it's the scenario that I almost played out yesterday, you know, on the show. If we did double dip at the quarterback position and take a guy second overall and a later round pick, and the later round pick outperforms who you take at the second round pick, it's not a bad thing. Ultimately, you're drafting talent, and talent is working out. It's just not ideally who you thought it was. And that becomes a scenario with Justin Gilbert. Hey, okay, took a swing at a guy, doesn't work out. Essentially, you can still stash him because he's on a guaranteed contract anyway.
Sure.
So no need cutting him. But you get a bonus in Ifo playing like a first-round pick, which is where he was graded at prior to the injury. And it's all paying off. It's all collectively happening kind of under our umbrella, which is a good thing. It's just not the scenario that is ideal in many cases' eyes because of where they were selected.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's make that impact. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, he's making his way over. He's grinning and smiling. Look at him. Like he's reading a funny joke. We'll have to find out what he was laughing at. Sir Andrew Gribble with us next on CBD.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Zagara Wilhelm Gibbs and now Sir Andrew Gribble in the house. Gribbs, how are you?
I'm great. There's the mic.
One day we'll actually turn the mic on.
There he is, Gibbs. Sorry about that, Gibbs. Sorry about that, Gribbs. Gribbs, you're a little bit ahead of us. We jumped into our position previews starting yesterday. We did the quarterbacks. We're going to do the running backs today. When you look at the quarterback position, how many quarterbacks do you think the Browns need to add this offseason, and where would you want to add them from ideally?
The quarterback position, I think you need to add one, and I would add them early in the draft because I think you're set behind that quarterback initially, and I think you have a player in Josh McCown who's competent enough and played at a high enough level to maybe if he's got to start the season, you know, keep the seat warm for a little bit and mentor that quarterback. I think, you know, you look at this roster and I think Josh McCown's one of the more valuable members on it because of that role he can play with a young quarterback. So I'm of the vast majority of people that think you got to get a quarterback early in the draft and go from that point forward. Whether who it's going to be, I don't know, but I think you've got the first pick wherever it is. If you think you can trade down and still get that quarterback, I'm a full believer in that. So you can get more assets, but if you think it's got to be at two, I think you got to get him there.
Do you think the Browns though need to add two quarterbacks, maybe one in the draft, one like? Are you comfortable? Because this is what we were talking about yesterday. Is yes, okay. So let's say you get Goff or Wentz or whatever at number two. You get hopefully your franchise quarterback. McCown can be that stopgap. You know he can't start 16 games. He can make a few starts for you. But I think you need somebody else to push Austin Davis out of here because I don't see Austin Davis as a viable starting option in the NFL. And if he's not a viable starting option, then what's the point?
Do you see Connor Shaw as a guy that can push Austin Davis?
I think he can, but I'd want to bring somebody else in. Because Josh McCown right now, it makes you feel very comfortable as your number two quarterback, but he's probably going to be here one more year.
Right. So that's the thing is, would you want to pull the unconventional move of getting a second quarterback in the draft, which teams have done with that? It's just a matter of where you take them. I think anywhere higher than maybe the fourth round, it gets a little bit weird. I mean, Cousins was a fourth round guy and RG3 was a first round guy, and it was made for some kind of head scratching. But I think if you do fifth, sixth, seventh, and then you're okay, and it's not that big of a deal.
Or add somebody else in free agency. I'm fine with getting this. It's an important position. It's an important position.
What free agent could you get that's better than what you have and not good enough to maybe consider as your starter to begin the year?
See, I'm fine with getting somebody that I could consider to be my starter at the beginning of the year because I'm fine if Like, I would love to bring RG3 here. I'd love to draft Goff, bring RG3 here, and then let them go and see if we can get these guys playing at a high level.
See, I think it's not on the level of a Tebow Manziel situation, but I think the RG3 thing comes with a sideshow that I don't know if you want. And I think that it's unfair maybe to RG3. Maybe he's brought some of it on himself. Maybe some of it's media kind of generated with his kind of position. But I'm not the biggest believer in bringing in RG3 just because it comes with more than just signing a guy that's going to compete for a backup quarterback job.
Now, is the sideshow that you're referencing essentially like the turmoil with the organization and his personality and persona? Or is it we gave up the farm for you and you haven't panned out at all for us as a player?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of I don't know the details of why he had that rift in Washington, but clearly this would be a headline making national move if you bring in an RG3. It's going to bring more attention to a quarterback spot that's already going to have a ton of attention because of potentially drafting a quarterback with that second pick. That's why I just think there if you can find better options, you go
like Chase Daniel.
That way.
Nah.
Do we know much about him other than that? Is he better than what you got? I mean, that's why I don't know if you.
I'd have to think he's better than Austin Davis.
I could probably agree with that.
Unimpressed with Austin Davis.
It's tough though, but I think if you're going to add two quarterbacks,
I would stick
in the draft. I just don't think what's out there is anything great enough to the point where you're going to want to invest. Because even some of these quarterbacks signing as free agents, even some of these lower tier quarterbacks, it's significant money.
It is. It's $3-4 million a year to be a backup now.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's worth it.
When you can draft a guy in the third, fourth, fifth round and pay him $4 million over the term of their contract.
I'd be fine even if you did Goff at two. Took a quarterback in the fourth, fifth round, something like that. And then if you want to take another one at the seventh or an undrafted free agent, bring somebody else in and let them all learn behind McCown. Just get guys in here because it is harder. I mean, the good quarterbacks, a lot of them do get all 16 games, but you want to have something in place. And I'd feel very comfortable this year that if you had Goff or Wentz starting and then you had, you needed somebody to come in, they got dinged up, they missed a game here or there, and you had McCown for a game, I'd feel great about that. But beyond that, I don't feel very great about what the Browns have at quarterback. I like Connor Shaw. I want to see him have the opportunity to develop, but I don't know that he has the arm strength to play quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah. He's got everything else. You can't have enough Connor Shaws in terms of the intangibles and the makeup of the guy, but you still need the certain skills.
Correct. So I think for a guy like Connor Shaw, what you do, if he has what you want in a teammate, what you want in a competitor, you keep him on the roster. You hate to say this. You practice squad him. You hope he rubs off on those other young players that you just drafted in some way, shape, and form, so they take on what he does and how he prepares and how he can grasp an offense so quickly and go out and execute it, but not to the level of a starter or even a competitor in the National Football League.
And what percentage of teams do you think truly believe that their number two and number three guys are NFL starting quarterbacks? Also?
Very few.
I just don't think that's a low
percentage.
I don't know if that's a realistic expectation to have for your quarterback depth chart.
I don't think I think that you want to try to improve on what you have. I think when teams know their guy isn't, then they try to get somebody else to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just go back to it. The fact that the Rams, a very quarterback needy franchise, let this guy go after he started eight games for them, said a lot to me. And then watching him play this year said a lot to me. Great guy, apparently does everything the right way, but I would rather bring somebody else in and give them an opportunity to show, hey, maybe we've caught, we found a spark here.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely not impressed, but to counter your point, the situations in which he found himself in were not ideal. I think the Browns finished that Bengals game week 14 with E.J. Bibbs, Duke Johnson, and Darius Jennings as the three
wide receivers. Well, how many Browns at a number of positions can say that?
That's true.
A receiver can say that about a quarterback can say it about a receiver, a tight end can say it about the quarterbacks, a running back can say it about the offensive line.
Sure.
The nose tackle can say it about the linebackers. It's all in all, there's a lot of work to be done. And the fact that we reworked this organization from the top down, and we now have different decision makers with a different, frame of mind, and how they're going to do things. That in it's safe to say that 2 years from now, this team is going to look significantly different
Absolutely.
Than it did at the conclusion of the 2015 season.
Listen, and Austin's under contract. I mean, we signed him to an extension, so he's going to be here. I just would like to bring someone in to compete with him.
And it's just crazy. I mean, again, like you see the contract he got. That's the market for quarterbacks. And if you're going to bring in like a Chase Daniel or something, it's going to be more money than
I'd rather draft
some other guys that'll contribute at other positions. Yeah.
And that's why I'd rather draft him, because then you're paying, you know, fourth round, fifth round money, which is not much. You've got him for 4 years and you can see what's going on at a cheap level. So that's what I would like to do that. We're talking about the franchise tags. Today's the first day that teams can tag players. Do the Browns have anybody tag worthy?
I think at this point, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's unlikely.
13.3 for an offensive lineman.
And then what's the one for say, is it safety it's slash defensive
over 10,
back?
Between 8 and 9?
Over 10.
Is it just over 10?
So I think, it's tough. I think it's tough to see at this point, especially with the situation the team finds itself in with the new look front office and things like that. I find it unlikely. I think you let them test the market and see what they can get. But
who would you want to keep? Like, what would your priority be of the Browns free agents?
You know, I think just because of the uncertainty you have with on the offensive line, potentially with Alex Mack, I would put Mitchell at the top of that list. And I think I would put probably Travis Benjamin at number two and Deshaun
Were you listening to the show?
I was not at all, honestly.
Liar.
I was talking to
– Why weren't you?
I was talking to Podolak. You know, I wasn't listening. So
you were laughing over there. No, yeah. That's what we said, too. That was our top three, and Craig Robertson at fourth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of interesting – if you look at the whole list of free agents, there's some interesting guys that have contracts up. I think Terrell Pryor is another guy
that
has his contract up. And so it's the small ones that'll kind of trickle out early, and the ones, you know, that get done. I think like last year at this time, Marlon Moore got signed to a contract. It's guys like that, you know, there's more than just the big name free agents that you got to lock up because it's a big roster.
I expect Bademosi to be back. I think they would want him back. Core special teams
it's
player.
It's going to be cheap.
Yeah.
He'll be cheap.
Can't be too expensive. You don't have to pay him as a cornerback. I think we found that out. So what did you think about – so we agree there in terms of those things. If Mitchell does go, in my mind, Alex Mack's gone. So Cam Irving slides into center. What would you see as the viable options at right tackle? Would it be Betonio moving from left guard to right tackle, Austin Pastore, who played some right tackle in his day? It seems to be one of those who Michael Bowie maybe off of the IR if he ever can play again.
Yeah, I think with a player as talented as Betonio, maybe you could move him out to that right tackle position. I think he'd be comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I don't know if he'd have to get any bigger. I think he'd be fine and flexible doing whatever he can do. I think he's shown the ability to get plugged in right away somewhere and have some success. So I think he would be probably your top option, because going the free agent route would be pretty expensive to do that.
Yep.
At that position. Pastore is another guy who has a contract situation. If they can bring him back,
yeah,
so you can bring him back. I think he is a better fit at that guard position than maybe the tackle position he played at Jacksonville. I think he did pretty well. I don't know the nitty gritty specifics on what he messed up, what he did well. So I think that's your short term solution. And then I think at the same time, as unpopular as this is, if you lose both Mitchell and Alex Mack, you probably have to draft a guy early. I think you have to shore up that position. That position group, because, you know, Joe Thomas is coming back, but this will be his 10th NFL season. You got to plan for the future. And I know the last thing fans want to hear is drafting offensive linemen, but it's probably something you got to do early.
If Joe Thomas does end up saying, you know what, like, I want to go to a contender, and it works out that everybody wants to trade. It works out for what the Browns are trying to do. It works out for Joe Thomas. I'm sure he watched that Super Bowl. Was like, man, I wish I had gone to the Denver Broncos and now I'd be a Super Bowl champion. I wonder if you do it before the draft so that you could – if you trade him for a first-round pick, you could just use that first-round pick on an offensive lineman. So you'd basically be subbing in an early guy. Or if you do it if they think the value's higher in the middle of the season, they could get something more for the future when teams are thinking, oh, man, let's get our Super Bowl right
now. So there's probably two types of teams that would be in the market for Joe Thomas. A team that would probably draft on the latter half of the draft from 16 to 32 or 31 per se, that feels they're a left tackle away from winning a championship and can make the type of trade with giving up a first-round pick or multiples or a first and a second for a guy like Joe Thomas, and they can capitalize on the cornerstone that Joe Thomas is. Or, as you said, the second half is a team that wants to lock up a guy for the next, you know, 2 to 4 years to be the cornerstone left tackle, and can give you future, you know, future picks for a guy like Joe Thomas, and maybe one asset. It's something they can build around because they've been shuffling along that offensive line for so many years.
Yeah.
It just seems, based on what we're hearing from Joe, what we're hearing from Sashi and Coach Jackson, I'm leaning here. Oh, I know. I think it's that time of year. But I would think at this time, maybe a month and a half ago, I would have thought it was more likely than I would think it is now.
Yeah, it could end up being something that Joe Thomas wants at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Could say, look, he's only got so many years left in the league. You know, I want to go try and get the ring because I think that I'm as optimistic as it gets, but the Browns are kind of starting over and taking this whole new approach. It's going to be a while before they're Super Bowl contenders.
And I really think – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe you can flip that when you get the quarterback since we have never had that.
Right.
And maybe that changes things, but it still seems to me like it's going to take a little bit of a while.
And I think even for Joe Thomas, just putting myself in the mindset of a player, it's the constant battle or questioning about even your employer. You know, am I safe? What kind of year is it going to be? That wears on you emotionally and mentally even before you go play the game physically. And I think for Joe Thomas, if it is somewhere else, it's always chasing the ring, as many vets who are great players in this league for a long time that don't have rings. But in some cases, it's just chasing winning. You know, winning in that culture, winning in life, it all mends together and just gives you, you know, a refreshed, you know, outlook on life. And you enjoy going to work when I would imagine, and I've only tasted this a couple times, but going to work when you're playing, you know, on a losing team and you most likely know you're going to get beat and you have that defeatist mindset,
yeah,
it just beats you down and wears you down. So the fact that Joe stated that he wants to be here obviously coincides with the values that he is as a player and as a man, first of all. So you have to applaud him for that, but you can't hate on a guy that wants to move on and win. And I think that's why, you know, I reference it time and time again, but T.J. Ward, former Brown, he probably loves the game of football so much more having been in Denver, not because Super Bowl was the icing on the cake, but just the winning culture and a new mindset and appreciation for this craft that he loves now that used to sometimes be so tedious here in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you got to see him already partying with Joe Hayden, his buddy, his running buddy here when they were with the Browns together. We're talking running backs today, Gribbs. Do you think that the Browns need to add a running back in this draft or in free agency? How big of a priority is that to you? Or do you think they're pretty good at the top with Crow and Duke for what we know Hugh Jackson wants to do, kind of similar to Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard?
I think it's a group that you can upgrade with talent. I just don't know if I put the priority as high as some other positions, if that makes sense. I think this is that's why I keep, when people ask me about the 32nd pick, I just say flat out best player available, because I don't think there's a position group maybe outside of tight end where you think, hey, we can upgrade this position and get better for the season right away. So I think that's why I put running back on the long list of position groups you can get better at. I just don't know if it trumps pass rusher. I don't know if it trumps in the defensive backfield. I don't know if it trumps offensive line if you're losing those guys as well. But I think we saw what you have in Crowell when he's getting the ball on a steady basis. I think Duke Johnson showed a lot with what he was able to do. I would be interested to see what he can do with more carries as well, because I thought he did show good burst, and especially if you can change up how he's running compared to Crowell. It's just so hard to judge both of them from a running standpoint based on what we saw from most of last year. But what Duke gives you in the passing game is maybe the new NFL, something you can do. You can use him in a lot of different ways, and I think we saw that with what Hugh did with Giovanni Bernard this past season. It is interesting, though, if you watch the Bengals this past year, Giovanni Bernard had a big, I think, big burst through the middle of the season, and then when the weather gets colder,
and then
it went back to Jeremy Hill, and it was working out pretty well for him, and then just kind of a weird playoff game against the Steelers where you don't have your quarterback. I think that it'll be interesting to see, like, and we saw Crowell, end of the year came along, he was getting the ball more, the game changes a little bit. And I think he looked pretty good. I thought the last four games.
He had 300 yards in the final four games.
Yeah, and I think I thought I saw improvement from him as a pass catcher as well. I think he's someone you can go into 2016 saying we feel pretty confident with this guy. But if you have the opportunity to provide more competition in that room, potentially get a guy like a third or fourth rounder, you see what the Cardinals got with David Johnson. You know,
sure.
I mean, you can get a special player in these mid rounds that can ascend the depth chart and give you one of the better running backs in the league right away.
We saw Jordan Howard mocked to us in Matt Miller's 7-round draft, the running back out of Indiana, or the big guy.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough market for those free agents, though.
See,
the big names,
tell you who I'd like, who I think would be a nice compliment, runs the power scheme well, can kind of do it all, is Steve Ridley. Only 27 years old, was very successful in New England, coming off of his torn ACL, he's going to be a full year removed from that, so he'll be healthy. You could probably get him in here for a 1-year deal for $1 million, and I think he'd be very good for that room.
He's in New York now?
He's a free agent. He was with the Jets last year, but he really wasn't. He never got healthy from that torn ACL.
His knock on him is fumbling, right? Is that what kind of ran him out in New England?
He lost four in New England in 2013, but that was it.
You know what, to me, would be very interesting, and that's maybe something we can do or kind of focus on in the second hour of the show, is to see where we would essentially rank Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson as a tandem collectively as you look at the league and their top two rushers. And I would imagine that with those two, especially with how old they are, or how young they are, rather, that they'd probably still be somewhere in the middle quartile in the National Football League as a rushing tandem. And to me, it projects very well that if used properly, you know, at a bargain of a price, how productive these guys can be in the next coming years for the Browns.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Steve Ridley would be nice to go with those guys. I think they're probably, if we did just off the top of my head, somewhere between probably 14 and 22.
Yeah, would you think that this group needs a veteran presence in that room right now?
Yeah, like James Starks is another guy that I would look at. Chris Ivory I would look at, too, especially for just the straight power. But
yes.
He's only 27. I just think he might cost a lot.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to spend.
Even for running back?
He's going to leverage his last 2 years of production to get
a payday. He might only get, what, like $3
million? I can't see him getting that much. It's just that the position is just not paying well at all on second deals. I can't even see. I mean, is Doug Martin going to get the biggest running back deal? And I still wouldn't even think it would be
Forte.
A big deal. You think Forte will?
Forte, it depends.
Near the end.
Forte's going to have, I have a feeling that Forte, who's, again, really good, better out of the backfield, I think, as a runner, he's going to have a very unique deal.
He's going to go to New England. That's where he should go.
New England's not going to pay him the kind of money
Think he would take a championship discount?
For sure.
That's why I think Martin would get the biggest deal, because he's still young.
Lamar Miller's a good back too, but I think he's going to end. I think Lamar Miller's going to end up staying in Miami, or he could go to Dallas. I'd like to see one of these young guys get to Dallas.
I mean, do we're talking about some of the top running backs in the league last year. Do these teams have any interest in re-signing them? I mean, that's the crazy thing with the position.
Yeah, I don't know. You would think that Tampa would want to keep Doug Martin around, but I don't think that they're going to. So it says. Doug Martin, they think more than $7 million annually to keep him in Tampa Bay. I think Doug Martin, Lamar Miller will probably get the top contracts. Forte will be right there, and then I think there'll be a big drop-off. I don't think teams are going to pay Ivory all that much money.
No, because it seems like he gets dinged up a little bit.
He's physical. But I would take a Chris Ivory, a guy that you played with on your Super Bowl team, James Starks. That guy runs hard as well.
I like Starks.
Yeah. I think he'll end up staying with Green Bay.
And I think he actually adds a different personality to this room. He's not like Crow. And he's not as diverse as Duke. So it's a different, kind of like, you know, Stephen Ridley. Ridley's a little bit more like Duke than anything, you know, a good receiver out of the backfield. But I think Starks is a good guy. But yeah, with the questions surrounding Eddie Lacy,
they're not going to let him go.
Starks is going to be there.
30 pounds of questions, man.
Correct.
That's been the mandate.
I think Chris Ivory at the right price would obviously be the top for the power back. I wouldn't want LeGarrette Blount, I don't think, but I would definitely take Steve Ridley as well.
It just seems like there's plenty of options out there because, like you said, the position in recent years has been devalued from a financial standpoint, and these guys are available.
Yes, they are. Gribbs, what can people look forward to at cleanbrowns.com and, of course, the Browns mobile app?
We had one of the more uplifting position reviews today with the tight ends coming out with Gary Barnage and what he was able to do with that group. I'll be interested to see if the Browns try to add to that group with a number two tight end as well. Pass catching option this year. And then I think rolling out later today, we'll just kind of a breakdown and a list just so fans are informed of who has some contract decisions coming up here in the next couple weeks. There's a bunch of players to know outside of Mitchell Schwartz and Travis Benjamin. We'll list them all out.
Get them there for you for the Gribbs. All right, folks, you can follow him on Twitter @Andrew_Gribble. Sir Andrew, our guest, as he is always, Tuesdays with Gribbs. I feel like we need to get you on twice a week, Gribbs. Can I come on twice a week?
I'm open.
You're open.
We always go a double segment with Gribbs.
We do. It is. We could do that twice.
We talk football.
We talk. Just talking football. Just dudes.
Gribbs reels us back in the offseason.
Yeah, he does. He does. When we're talking about nonsense. Dips saw a great concert last night. We'll talk about that when I come back. All right, Gribbs, thank you so much, brother. Right. When we come back, 216-578-0850. That's the way to call us and get on board. Of course, we'll talk about the running back position here in hour number two. Segura Wilhelm Gibbs, CBD.